Okay, hi, and we are continuing with the Treatise on White Magic, video commentary number 9. We are still in this magnificent, detailed introduction. We've been looking at the soul as the quality of life, along with many other definitions, and we have experienced Master DK's warning about the limitations of words and how we will only find the truth, not through words, but if the truth arises within us and is recognized because of that reason in other contexts, such as the outer world. So this is a discussion of the soul. It's brought into being when the spirit aspect and the matter aspect are related to each other. And I've discussed with you a little of my own view that at least on the higher levels of the universe, consciousness itself may be responsible for creating what we call matter. Okay, and that the soul is the attractive force and the coherent force holding all things together. And that's the second. And now we are reaching the third statement. And that this, there's really only one soul, one attractive force, one consciousness. But there are many differentiations which account for the emergence of forms manifesting different qualities. This soul manifests differently in the various kingdoms of nature, says DK, but its function is ever the same whether we are dealing with an atom of substance and its power to preserve its identity and form and carry forward its activity along its own lines, or whether we deal with a form in one of the three kingdoms of nature, mineral, vegetable, animal, held coherently together, demonstrating characteristics, i.e. qualities, pursuing its own instinctual life, not self-conscious, and working as a whole towards something higher and better. We might say, driven by its soul towards something higher and better. So soul is consciousness, but soul is also quality. Soul is that something which aggregates various types of emanations, brings them together, and produces a form which evidences a distinctive quality. In one way, consciousness is one with many different apertures, many different portals of sensitivity, we might say, but in another way, the qualities of the various emanations, and therefore, in a sense, the soul of these various emanations differ, at least in the relative world, the Mahamayavic world. All right. So therefore, the soul is that which gives distinctive characteristics and differing form manifestations, because different emanations are held in differing relationships, and these relationships determine the distinctive characteristics and the differing forms. So we know when we look at the rainbow that though all the colors come forth from the white light, they appear distinctive, and we can combine them in various ways to produce aggregations and forms of differing natures. So the soul is the producer of distinctive quality. Soul is the producer of distinctive quality. The soul plays upon matter. It is causative in this respect, forcing it to assume certain shapes. In this case, the etheric body is like the soul of matter, because the etheric body is the energy field that shapes matter, which itself cannot aggregate into any forms. So etheric body is form building and represents represents a higher type of soul. So the soul plays upon matter, forcing it to assume certain shapes, to respond to certain vibrations, and to build those specified phenomenal forms which we recognize in the world of the physical plane as the mineral, vegetable, animal, and human, and for the initiate other forms as well, as we rise through the kingdoms, as we rise through the kingdom of souls. And the kingdom of planetary lives, etc. So soul, soul, in a way, another way of thinking of it, soul is the geometrizer. And quality, every quality, is associated with its own geometry, has its own geometry. And geometry is relationship in apparent space within this Mahamayavic world. The qualities, number three, the soul manifests differently in the various kingdoms of nature. Okay. We want to have that. And now the next one. The qualities, vibrations, colors, and characteristics in all the kingdoms of nature are soul qualities, as are the latent powers in any form seeking expression and demonstrating potentiality. So when we're looking for distinctions in these various areas of quality, vibration, color, I suppose I would have to include and sound, our soul qualities. In their sum total at the close of the evolutionary period, they will reveal what is the nature of divine life and the world's soul, that oversoul which is revealing the character of God. So, is the oversoul the same as the anima mundi? And usually the usual connotation is that the anima mundi is associated with non-self-conscious forms of life. But if we think of it in the broader sense, then we might look at it inclusively and relate it to the oversoul. But the oversoul, I think, is a good term to include those higher types of consciousness which exist on the higher planes and in relation to higher expressions of the one life. So, you know, God geometrizes, we are told, and the many archetypes which are part of the divine purpose are revealed at the end of the evolutionary period. S-E-Y, that's it. Evolutionary period. Purpose emerges through soul, thence through form, and is archetypal. Right. So, from the world of divine purpose come the great forms which will manifest as a reflection in the mosaic worlds. And I call those the lower worlds, you know, where distinction between the various parts seems to prevail. All right, the qualities and vibrations, colors and characteristics are soul qualities. Therefore, really, this is an amazingly thorough discussion of spirit, soul, and body, and is really foundational to all of our later studies. I think, you know, we can only ignore different parts of the voluminous teaching of Master DK at our peril, because important parts of the teaching will be missing unless we are thorough in our examination of all that he has written. Something that you really need, a hidden piece is somewhere that will give you the key to something you have read elsewhere, and without which you will not have the key. So let us be inclusive in attempting to absorb all that he has written, because everything he has written aspects every other thing and potentially sheds light upon it. Therefore, the soul, through these qualities and characteristics, basically meaning the same, manifests as conscious response to matter. For the qualities are brought into being through the interplay of the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, and their effect upon each other. This is the basis of consciousness. This is a fundamental statement. Though perhaps not easily understood in its entirety. Therefore, the soul, through these qualities and characteristics, manifests as conscious response to matter. It is the sentient responsive factor. For the qualities are brought into being through the interplay of the pairs of opposites, in what manner we do not know yet, the pairs of opposites, spirit and matter, and their effect upon each other, remaining as yet unspecified in DK's descriptions. This is the basis of consciousness, the interplay between spirit and matter is the basis of consciousness, and how the different qualities are brought into being through that interplay, we do not yet know. But we'll know someday. The soul is the conscious factor in all forms, you know, the conscious, what can we call it, sentient, responsive, touching factor within all forms. The source of that awareness which all forms register, all forms, note, no such thing as a form that does not register contact as a form which in some way does not register contact. And of that responsiveness to surrounding group conditions which the forms in every kingdom of nature demonstrate. So we would have, let's look at it another way. Without soul, we would have non-responsiveness amongst the various existences in the universe. But now we have a vibrant, dynamic interplay as one form of life touches another. So we say soul is that which allows touch and is associated with the sense of touch. It is the great relational factor, and holding all things in what we call responsive relationship. Therefore, says the Tibetan, the soul might be defined as that significant aspect in every form, excuse me, that significant aspect in every form made through this union of spirit and matter. But then how does that union occur? How does this union occur if not through soul? Okay, that's another question. That significant aspect in every form, which feels, registers, awareness, attracts and repels, responds or denies response, and keeps all forms in a constant condition of vibratory activity. Another great definition. All of these should be put in the AAB extracts. Can't stop right now, though, to do it. Soul feels, registers awareness, attracts and repels. So we can say my soul attracts your soul and vice versa. Excuse me. Responds or denies response. You know, the way the inert gases, let us say, in the periodic table do not respond to each other, and keeps all forms in a condition of vibratory activity. Of course, the form itself has its own type of vibration, but we're talking about a particular type of vibratory activity which produces quality. A particular type of vibratory activity which produces quality. The soul is the perceiving entity. Or is it the perception itself? The soul is the perceiving entity produced through the union of Father Spirit and Mother Matter. Well, I would say, you know, in my view, it is the method by which Father, the Father aspect, perceives. Or the perception characteristic of the Father aspect. So many definitions are here from so many different angles until maybe one of them really resonates with us and brings in sufficient light. It is that which in the vegetable world, for instance, produces response to the sun's rays. So, you know, let's really think of it as the responsive factor within all forms and the unfolding of the bud. It is that in the animal kingdom which enables it to love its master, hunt its prey, and follow out its instinctive life. So it is an orienting factor which produces many different kinds of relationship with the environment. It is that in man which makes him aware of his environment and his group, which enables him to live his life in the three worlds of his normal evolution as the onlooker, the perceiver, the actor. So soul in man is these factors, the observer, the onlooker, the perceiver, the actor. And, you know, the feeling one, the touching one, the responding one, feeling, touching, responding, changing according to touch. Changing according to touch. This it is which enables him eventually to discover that this soul in him is dual, and that part of him responds to the animal soul, and part of him responds to his divine soul, another entity or aspect of the man focused on still higher planes. And the him, as we're talking about here, the him is the sentient factor in the middle. It's always the middle principle. I hope that all of these definitions are not confusing us. They are meant to enrich our understanding. So it is our potential responsiveness to all other emanations, great and small, which must grow. You know, there are 10 million things of which we are not now aware, but which are present. As soul grows within us, we become aware of these factors. They register with us. Soul is that which registers the presence of various factors within the environment. So, soul is that which registers the presence of various hitherto unregistered factors within the environment. By far, the greater number of factors in the universe is by us unregistered. We are not impressed. We are not touched. We are too insensitive. So soul is a growing sensitivity to the presence of the divine multitude. The majority, however, at this time will be found to be functioning fully as neither purely animal nor purely divine, but can be regarded as human souls, you know, a very circumscribed range of contacts is the usual for the average human being. And sometimes we may have to shut off for a time our responsiveness to the anima mundi, to the animal soul, to the lower forms, in order to cultivate response to higher foci of consciousness, the higher aspects of our nature and their characteristic consciousness, which we might say is occurring simultaneously with our middle consciousness. I think, in psychosynthesis, there is that egg diagram, which Roberto Sergioli was using to demonstrate the different layers of consciousness, the subconscious, the human or middle consciousness, the super consciousness in its varying grades. Our whole goal here is to expand our ability to touch what was hitherto unregistered. This is the coming to light within the field of consciousness of the unregistered factors. We must grow through the coming to light in the field of consciousness of the previously unregistered factors. And I'm sure if we look back upon our life, we will see that at a more mature age, we are registering far more in our human interaction, our environmental interaction, than would have been possible or was possible in earlier, more oblivious, less sensitive days. The theme is the growth of consciousness, the growth of sensitivity, the growth of responsiveness, the growth of soul, the growth of our ability to register internal and external factors until the field of consciousness grows so great, eventually after trillions of years, that our field of consciousness becomes identical with the field of consciousness of the universal logos, which we are and have always been. We are the universal logos on its own plane, even now, and we are the universal logos in multiple extension, multiple variable extension. We are the universal logos on its own plane, even now, and also the universal logos in multiple multiple. How do you spell that word? Multiple variegated extension. I am the monad in extension, so are you. There is one monad. But as our consciousness is circumscribed through that extension, the factor of differentiating soul varies with each of us until through final retraction, we regain the soul of the whole and the identity as the whole. It seems an easy process to grasp, but of course, in time and space, it is very extended and difficult. Now, let's look further. What we have been doing here is, when hearing and sight on those levels are both producing registered experience, then we have the occultist plus the mystic. And now these various definitions of soul, breaking them down and into parts and subparts. Again, that which arises from the union of spirit and matter, however that union is achieved, the attractive force, the differentiated soul in the various kingdoms of nature, that which is responsible for all these distinguishing features, qualities, vibrations, colors, characteristics. And now the next. The soul of the universe. Goodness, what does he mean here by universe? Let's see. He is, for the sake of clarity, capable of differentiation, or rather, owing to the limitations of the form through which that soul has to function, capable of recognition at differing rates of vibration and stages of development. I think in this book and in this introduction, Master DK is really working on a profound expression, even, you know, a philosophical expression of quite a degree of profundity. So the soul is capable of differentiation, or rather, owing to the limitations of the form through which that soul has to function. And, you know, limited form, in my view, has to do with circumscribed self-sight or self-registration. So, the limitations of form have to do with circumscribed self-registration. And I'm thinking of the self as the universal logos. This is my assumption, presumption. But the different types of soul with different characteristics and different scopes of consciousness has to do with the scope of the form. And the scope of the form has to do with the processes of division as they occur through emanation. I'll put that down. The scope of the form is related to emanative division, or division and circumscription through the progressive process of emanation. The soul nature in the universe, therefore, manifests in certain great states of awareness with many intermediate conditions, of which the major can be enumerated as possible. Okay, well, as follows. So let's just say differentiations of the soul nature in universe. That's what we're looking at here. And of course, the great beings on planes higher than we can even conceive or presently imagine, that soul nature is huge and deep in scope. And yet there is the soul of the atom and the soul of the subatomic particle, the responsiveness of those things. So soul, depending upon the level of vibratory immersion, so will soul manifest. Depending on the level of vibratory immersion, so will the universal soul manifest. Okay, so the soul nature in the universe, therefore, manifests in certain great states of awareness, including the human state of awareness, with many intermediate conditions, of which the major can be listed as follows. And I think, you know, we're seeing that I've always felt it to be the case that the introduction to a treatise on white magic is not easy. He goes very deeply here into definitions, which hopefully will impress our minds and reveal a degree, an increasing degree of light. So there's consciousness, this consciousness, or that state of awareness in matter itself due to the fact that Mother Matter has been fecundated by Father Spirit, and thus life and matter have been brought together. What is the nature of this fecundation? We can ask ourselves, but maybe not answer. So there is the consciousness of the atom, as the book by Alice Bailey describes. This type of consciousness concerns the atom, molecule, the cell, of which all forms are constructed. This is the consciousness of the anima mundi, as that entity is usually conceived. Thus, the form of the solar system, of a planet, and of all that is found upon or within a planet is produced. Okay, so he's not giving consciousness itself a ranking which relates only to self-consciousness. He's also talking about non-self-conscious consciousness, or the response ability of the anima mundi. So there is just consciousness per se. The great states of awareness, or the great states of soul. We are dealing with the great states of awareness in universe, which means the great states of soul. All right, the next one, intelligent, sentient consciousness, that evidenced in the mineral and vegetable kingdom. It is selective and guided. Guided by a great informing life of the kingdom. It is this which is responsible for the quality, you know, the color, the pitch, the sound, the shape and coloring of the vegetable and mineral forms, and for their specific natures. So these specific natures are caused by intelligent selectivity. Not all qualities are to be found in any particular form, but a limited number arranged geometrically in a certain manner. Then there is, so he's given us the general principle of consciousness or awareness or responsiveness, the ability to change because of contact. Consciousness is the ability to move or change because of contact. Consciousness always requires contact. If there is no contact between the subject and object, we do not have consciousness, and we might also say that consciousness is the relationship and contact between subject and object. All right, the next is animal consciousness. We have some of that as human beings. The awareness of soul response of all forms in the animal kingdom, producing their distinctions, species, and nature. This type is intelligent and selective. It always amazes me how a dog recognizes a dog, you know. When there's a bark at a far distance, the dog's ears perk up and there is a response. It might not be the same to the cry of a bird. There is something in that type of sensitive contact which recognizes the quality of that which is contacted. So we have this animal consciousness in our forms. But it doesn't end there. It continues into the world of self-consciousness, human consciousness. Okay. Human consciousness or self-consciousness, a center is identified. Is identified, and awareness of that center is sustained in the consciousness of the entity at this particular level. Human consciousness is self-consciousness towards which the development of the life form and awareness in the other three kingdoms has gradually tended. And what is being said here, there is a tending towards human consciousness in all the other lower kingdoms, gradual and progressive. And we know we don't leap from being a mineral to being a human being. One has to pass through the vegetable and animal kingdoms, or the progressive life has to pass through the vegetable and animal kingdoms. This term concerns the individual consciousness of man, not a generalized responsiveness to the environment, not a generalized responsiveness to the environment without a perceived center. Okay, generalized. Okay, and in the early stages is more animal than divine, you know, the period of animal man, owing to the dominance of the animal body with its instincts and tendencies. And these instincts and tendencies compel attention. HPB defines man accurately as an animal plus a god, and such thinkers as St. Paul asked us, "Know ye not that ye are gods?" And the animal was there as well, and he had quite a bit of difficulty in the relationship between the animal and the god, which he has immortalized for us in certain words about his wretched in-between state, torn in both directions. Later, it is more strictly human, neither purely animal nor entirely divine, but fluctuating between the two stages, thus making the human kingdom a great battleground between the pairs of opposites, between the urge or pull of spirit and the lure of matter or mother nature, and between the lower self, between that called the lower self and the spiritual man. So, you know, readers of these books are attempting to emerge out of the strictly human state. Let's say students of the Ageless Wisdom are attempting to emerge out of the strictly human state. They have already emerged, emerged from the more animal state, which is responsive to the animal form primarily. Then we enter, how far will this take us? Maybe not as far as the different stratifications of consciousness as they exist in the universe. We will now take up group consciousness, but there is consciousness of the one and on different levels of entified life. There's a kind of a repetition of this very sequence, only on a much larger scale. The one eventually can become the galaxy, and finally the universe itself. But now we go to the group consciousness of what we normally call the soul. The group consciousness of what we normally call the soul. This is our objective at this time, which is the consciousness of the great sum totals, some much larger than others. One about whom naught may be said is a great sum total, but it's a minuscule being compared with even other sum totals within the galaxy, and the galaxy itself is a sum total, but minuscule in a way compared to larger aggregations, and so it goes until we really reach the great sum total. And it is arrived at by man through the development, first of all, of his individual consciousness. So we move from the individual to the group. And we become aware, first of all, of the sum total of the lives of our animal, emotional, and mental natures. By animal, he means primarily, I think, etheric physical. Etheric physical level. So first of all, we concentrate upon the aggregation which our animal, which our form nature is. It's a collection of lives found on the etheric physical or animal level, the emotional and mental levels, plus the spark of divinity dwelling within the form which they make. We eventually become aware of that, and not just of these forms and their demands. Then comes awareness of his group, as specified for him in that group of disciples working under some one master who represents to him the hierarchy. And this is the stage at which Master DK was working with a collection of students, worked with a group of students, which was, in a way, sub-hierarchical, but definitely related to the entirety of hierarchy. The hierarchy might be defined as the sum total of those sons of men who are no longer centered in the individualized self-consciousness, but who have entered into a wider realization, that of the planetary group life. I think it's really important to look at the different definitions. They always give us a different angle. So, a still different definition of hierarchy. The sum total of those human beings, those sons of men who are no longer in the strictly human kingdom, because they are no longer centered in the individualized self-consciousness. They've moved beyond the confining ring past not. They have moved beyond this particular confining ring past not, but who have entered into a wider realization, thus the value of reading books like Cosmic Fire and the Rays and the Initiations, giving us that broader realization. They've entered into a wider realization of that planetary, that of the planetary group life. And, you know, the higher initiates beyond the planet and the group life of the solar system. And thus we go, always including more and more in what we call group life. So, always more and more is included in what we call group life. There are stages in this realization, mounting all the way from that tiny group recognition of the probationary disciple up to the completed group awareness of the life in whom all forms have their being, the consciousness of the planetary logos, that spirit before the throne. We are a spirit before the throne, our logos is, who manifests through the form of a planet, as man manifests through his form in the human kingdom. So these are, you know, great distinctions exist between the groups in universe. Great distinctions. A tiny collection of students of a master, a few disciples, all the way up. Well, it's not all the way, but let us say to that collection of lives that comes under the planetary logos and manifests through a planetary scheme. And that's just the beginning, because we're dealing with a tiny non-sacred planet. So vast, vast indeed is the universe, and yet, you know, relatively an infinitesimal compared with the absolute infinitude of the self-reflected absolute deity in an extra universal context. So, the soul, therefore, may be regarded as the unified sentiency and the relative awareness of that which lies back of the form of a planet and of a solar system. And not to stop there. Unified sentiency, interesting term, meaning a type of coherent awareness in which many factors are included, or many, let's say, lesser forms of awareness are included. So the many perceptions are really one perception of a great inclusive life. A type of coherent awareness in which many lesser forms of awareness are included. The soul, therefore, may be regarded as the unified sentiency. Not a piecemeal sentiency. I perceive this, you perceive that. No, it's one being perceiving through the differentiated perceivers. And I'll put that down, one great being perceiving through the, apparently at least, differentiated perceivers. And the relative awareness of that which lies back of the form of a planet and of a solar system. That's one type of soul. Itself still a differentiation and a minuscule range of consciousness compared with still larger aspects of soul. What is the galactic soul? And yet a drop in the bucket compared with the soul of other aggregations all the way up to the universal logos. Any particular universal logos in an endless sequence of universal logoi. These latter are the sum total of all forms, organic and inorganic, as the materialist differentiates them. We are not the materialist, and we do not differentiate between organic and inorganic. The soul, though constituting one great total, is, however, limited in its expression by the nature and quality of the form in which it is found. Let's say the soul or awareness within the causal body, egoic lotus, is circumscribed greatly compared to soul understood as the awareness of the monad. The soul, though constituting one great sum total, and let's remind ourselves what he called this, a unified sentiency, is, however, limited in its expression by the nature and quality of the form in which it is found. The soul of the atom certainly does not have the scope of the soul of a human being. And there are consequently forms which are highly responsive to and expressive of the soul, and others which, owing to their density and quality of the atoms of which they are composed, are incapable of recognizing the highest aspects of the soul or of expressing more than its lower vibration, tone, and color. So we have a hierarchy of soul expression, all the way from great and sensitive forms through which higher aspects of sensitivity can express, down to very low material forms which cut out, exclude those higher aspects of soul or of sensitivity. The infinitely small is recognized. The infinitely vast is assumed. Well, I don't think we can, if we take the word literally, we don't have in any particular universe anything infinitely small. But maybe we do, within the absolute deity self-reflection in an extra universal world. There we have infinitely small. And it's recognized as infinitely vast. But then I'm ridiculously literal about the word infinite. So it can be used simply as a figure of speech, meaning very small, very, very large, or very, very small. The infinitely small is recognized, the infinitely vast is assumed, but it remains as yet a concept until such time as the consciousness of man is inclusive as well as exclusive. As well as exclusive. Well, we're getting there now, folks. This concept will be understood when the second aspect is contacted and men understand the nature of the soul. And mostly, you know, we're very involved. Mostly we are very involved in the third aspect of divinity. It must be also remembered that just as the basic triplicity of manifestation worked out symbolically in man as his quota of energy, physical energy, his nervous system, and body, the body mass, energy, the nervous system and body mass, the one, two, and three, so the soul can also be known as a triplicity, the higher correspondences of the lower. So, we will soon deal with the soul as a triplicity next time around. So this is then the end of A Treatise on White Magic video commentary number 9 from page 36 until what? Page 39. Okay. And we'll begin next time with the of A Treatise on White Magic video commentary number 10 from page 39. Well, it's, you know, the rest of the book is much more concrete in a certain sense. It's not so abstract and not so rigorously investigative of these fundamental terms, but we need to do this. You know, it's not, the old story is that the introduction to this book, A Treatise on White Magic, was so abstruse that the editors repeated it again in the introduction, not realizing, in a sense, they had already read through it. We can understand that. But we're going very slowly, and hopefully it is coming clearer to us all the time. Okay, then we'll go on to number 10 when we can, and we'll see you soon. Bye-bye.